Hello, and welcome to episode 8 of RumPod. I am your host, Amanda McCall. Are you ready to share the love? The show notes for each episode at rumpod.com contain links to this and other stories by our featured authors, all of whom have generously agreed to share their stories with us for free. Please support them in any way you can, like exploring more of their work. This week's story is an alternative reality fiction by Kate Copesley titled The Angel and Her Gun, which is part of the Angelic Agents series. Kate has another series on the go at the moment, and it's called Five Tribes, a young adult series totally worth your time checking out. She has also penned a standalone novel called Six Keys, and two short story collections, one called All the Things We Seek, which is mostly tales of science fiction, and the other is called Significant Circumstances. This one is a collection of four short stories, which includes a companion to today's tale, plus also one supernatural tale set in a fishing village, a vampire story, and a magical tale about a bedroom door. You can purchase Kate's works on Amazon, Smashwords, Sony, iTunes, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, like her on Goodreads, follow her on Pinterest, subscribe to her newsletter, and also check out her blog, Pieces of Stars, which is at katecopesley.blogspot.com. This week's tale is narrated by yours truly. This story contains explicit scenes and coarse language. Without further ado, sit back, grab a glass of your favourite beverage, and enjoy. The Angel and Her Gun by Kate Copesley. At least I have my gun this time, I told myself, caressing the holster on my right hip. I was sitting on the desert floor, trying in vain to eke out some shade from the rock next to me. The gun couldn't get me food, water, or shelter. But it would protect me from any wildlife that might take an interest, not to mention the human predators that could make an appearance. The chances of the latter were slim, I had to admit. I was hoping someone would show up and deliver me. There was no telling how long I'd been out there, in the middle of nowhere. I'd woken up with the headache from hell, and the bump to show the reason. I cursed my gullibility. Every time a poor slob came to me with a story, I fell for it, without fail. This wasn't the worst fix I'd ever been in, but it wasn't the easiest to escape, by any means. I closed my eyes for the 100th time, sensing the terrain around me, for life of any sort. It was a handy skill, being able to feel the souls within a certain radius. Up until now, I'd felt nothing but lizards, bugs, and the occasional rodent. The sun at that time of day was beating down on my head with unforgiving rays. Unlike what you might imagine, angels sweat. Here on Earth, we piss, puke, bleed, and sleep too. It's part of living out of the heavenly presence. Fallen angels, or demons, as we call them here, had been living this way for thousands of years, ever since Lucifer and His Holiness had their tussle. I'd been stuck here a mere 50 years, and the longer I was here, the less I seemed to know about humans and their ways. I opened my eyes. There was a horse headed my way with two riders, both young, one male and one female. One horse wasn't enough for three, and even though I could tell they were humans, I could not tell if they were good or evil, which was how I'd gotten into this predicament in the first place. I sent a prayer heavenward that they would at least give me a drink of water and point me in the direction of the nearest town. Then I sat down to wait. They were approaching at a sedate pace, So it was a heap more minutes before I saw them on the horizon. I watched as their horse approached. And when it got close enough for them to notice me, I climbed up on the rock I'd been crouched behind and cursed my choice of head-to-toe black leather. I admit, my clothing is a vanity of ridiculous proportions, considering I've lived most of my time here on Earth in the sandy desert climate I was now stranded in. Black is impractical, hot, easily shows dust, makes it tough to be identified as an angel. On the other hand, if I see one more angel dressed in white, I will shoot myself. The horse slowed as it reached me. I peered up, under the brim of my hat, at the teenage boy sitting on the front of the horse and the little girl holding the shotgun across her lap, who sat behind him. "Howdy," I said, touching the brim in respect. "Howdy," he said, nodding. "Got myself into a bit of a predicament," I said. "That explains why you're sitting out here on a rock in the middle of nowhere. What happened?" I hesitated. Before I exposed myself to the kindness of strangers, I put out a feeler. "I don't suppose you've got any water. I've been out here since morning and I've got a powerful thirst." He worked his water cask free and handed it to me. I took three careful swallows and handed it back. "This morning I was in Hamilton, where a group of young people came into town looking for help. They told me there was a cattle rustler come onto their ranch and stolen 30 head, and they wanted someone to go with them to help retrieve their beasts. Being the gullible fool that I am, I joined up with them, and we rode out near here. They stopped for a bit, supposedly to look for the tracks, when one of them sneaked up behind me, hit me over the head and stole my horse. Now that is a shame, but no offense meant. It could all be a big fat lie," he said in a soft voice. He was wearing a hat himself, so it was hard to see his eyes. "How do we know that your story's above board?" I sighed and flashed him the silver ring on my right forefinger. It was the equivalent of a sheriff's badge, worn by every angelic agent. It was carved with a silver cross given to me at the start of my assignment by Gabriel himself. Demons couldn't wear crosses. They burned like fire. "Never saw a woman gunslinger before," he said, looking down at my ring. "So I guess you're an angel too, huh?" "Yes, on both counts." "Name's Samora. What's yours?" I asked. "My name's Nicodemus, and this is my sister Petunia," he said. His sister nodded to me. "Where are you all headed? Is the nearest town far from here?" I wasn't sure where to go, to be honest. "Well, if you go back where we came from, you'll be at our ranch, 3 days' ride, near Reese River. We are headed to Keenisville, which, according to the directions we were given, is about 8 miles in the direction we're riding. We can't give you a ride, but you're welcome to walk alongside us and share our water skin if you'd like." I stood. "I'd be glad to. One town is the same as the next when you've got nothing but your gun and the clothes in your back." "Why didn't they take your gun? Looks like a nice piece," he said as we walked. "Not sure. The only thing I can think of is that they were afraid. I am an angel. It's one thing to steal my horse, but to steal my gun is almost blasphemous. I don't know that there's many who would go that far." "Maybe so. I hate to speak ill of my own kind, but there's not much that I haven't seen." "You can't be more than 16. No offense intended, son, but I've been on this earth 50 years. As you can see, I'm still optimistic enough to believe in the good of humankind." He gasped when he heard how old I was. "Truth be told, many say that I look no more than 20 years old." "So it's true then, your kind lives forever." I shook my head, golden braid swinging. "Not forever. Eternity is a long time. Here on Earth, I'm as close to mortal as I'll ever be. I can even die, if killed by one of my own." "Or a demon, yes?" "Believe it or not, We don't like to talk about it, but demons and angels are variants of the same thing. One good and one bad. Which is which depends on the viewpoint of the teller. I will say, I work for the higher power, and demons, well, they work for Lucifer himself. Phew. Well, 50 years or not, I've seen enough to curl your hair. You ain't asked me why my sister and I are riding through the desert on a single horse. I figured if you wanted to talk about it, you would, I said. Well, I'd be pleased to tell you. Maybe you could even help us out, he said. The sun battered and bruised me. I was happy to have anything to put my mind to while we travelled, and I told him as much. Well, about 3 days back, a man came to our ranch, asked to see my pa. We brought him round to the pen, and he went on some speech about how he was acquiring land around the ranch, wanted to buy up ours and make his collection complete. My pa said no, and he went away. Came back a week later, asked again, would we sell our place? Again my pa said no. The man came back one more time with big men, said, you'd better sell your place this time. Pa pulled his shotgun and ordered him off our land. The man left. 3 nights ago, the man came back with a bunch of men, killed my pa, burned our barn, our pens, our house, killed every head of cattle we owned. Still, don't know why he didn't kill me or my sister. Got the sweetest 300 acres of riverland in these parts. We were left with nothing but a few coins my dad had buried, our horse and our shotgun. It was a horrible story. I didn't want to ask the next question, but I did anyway, with no little trepidation. You think he was a demon? I asked. I have my suspicions, he said. I hesitated, dreading the answer, but I needed to ask. Did he tell you his name? I don't know if he was lying or not, but he called himself Gareth. I exhaled, feeling a relief I tried not to show. Well, if he was a demon, it ain't gonna do you a lot of good. You can't kill a demon, son. I guess I know that now, thanks to you, but what am I supposed to do? He killed my pa. He's got to pay. I can't guarantee you'll find this Gareth, but how about I help you? If he's a demon, I can take care of him, and if he's not, then I know people who can track him down. Murder is against the law, and that man is a criminal, I said. I studied the boy as we walked, taking in his lanky form. His face was long, his nose as well, ears sticking out under his hat. His eyes and his sister's were the same shade of grey, though her face was round where his was thin. Both siblings had the same light brown hair, though hers was pulled into two braids that framed her shoulders. They looked well fed, but tired. They didn't speak for the rest of the way to Kinnisville. It was about sunset when we arrived. I turned to the two. "Do either of you have a place to stay?" I asked. Nicodemus shook his head. "We have a place in every town. I can't guarantee it will be the best place to hang your hat, but it will be clean and warm," I said. We ambled into town, careful to keep a watch out, but near sunset, everyone was making their way home for supper. Any agent would go directly to the chapel, and that is where I went. I didn't expect a reverend, but I did look for a sign, and I found it. "All agents apply to Cooney Hotel on State Street," it read. "Come on, Nick. Let's head over and get us a room," I said. "How can I help you?" said the man behind the counter. We stood in the lobby of a generic hotel. There was a clock in the corner and 3 stiff-looking chairs for waiting, which is where Nicodemus and Petunia sat, hoping that I could get them a room for the night. The sign on the church said I could get a room here for the night, I said, flashing my ring. He examined it closely, then smiled. I'd be happy to get a room for you, ma'am, he said. If it's not too much trouble, sir, could you get a room for my friends, too, I asked. I was beaten and robbed a ways back, and they took care of me. He considered me for a moment. I think we could find something for them as well. The parson usually leaves the parish for the chapel around 9 o'clock in the morning. Since you've had your supplies, and I assume your horse taken, he'll have things for you, so you can continue on in your work, he said. Then, holding out the ledger for me to sign, he handed me the pen and waited for me to write my name. Then he handed me 2 keys. The dining hall is still open if you want some victuals. The hotel will treat tonight, and you can pay us when you meet up with the parson, he said, and pointed to the door at the end of the hall. Your rooms are upstairs. I have one more question for you, if you have the time. I'm looking for a rancher named Gareth. Have you heard of him? The man's face went as white as a sheet. If I were to guess, I'd say he'd heard of the man. You should ask the parson about him. People round here don't talk about him much, he said. That was all he said, and I understood then that it was all he was going to say. I motioned to my new acquaintances, and we walked into the dining room and took a table. We'll take 3 of the special, I said, and the woman left for the kitchen. I turned to the kids. We need to come up with a plan. I inquired about Gareth, and it seems like, from the clerk's response, he's pretty well known in these parts. He said I should talk to the parson tomorrow. I have to tell you, I've got a bad feeling about this. If everyone in town feels the same way about this Gareth fellow, it's going to be almost impossible to find allies to help take him down. If we're lucky, we find some others that he's wronged. If we're not, we call in some agents. I think I saw a telegraph office. The most important thing is I need you not to try to take care of this yourself. Not until I've established how powerful he is and how far his arm can reach. The last thing your father would want is for his 2 children to get killed after they so miraculously survived.
We ain't asking anyone for help.
We don't need help. If you can't get us what we need, we'll take care of this ourselves, Nicodemus said. I cursed his stubbornness. Fool kid, seemed to want to get himself killed. Look at me, kid. Don't do anything stupid. I can get you Gareth if you just wait a darned minute, I said.
Well, we'll see about that, ma'am. I can wait a while, but Gareth has got to pay, one way or another. That is the only promise I'll make.
I sent a prayer skyward, hoping that the boss would send some serendipity my way, so these kids didn't have to die. I was bone-weary by the time I dragged myself up to my room. I left the kids at their room with a terse good night, and fumbled my key in the lock. I sat on the bed, collapsed rather. It had been a long day, full of walking and baking in the heat. I had just laid down my head on the pillow, clothes still on, over the covers, when the door knocked. I ignored it, hoping it would go away, that whoever it was would leave me alone. The knock became more insistent. So, sighing, I heaved myself up off the bed. I cracked the door, and when I opened it to peer on the other side, I gasped, unbelieving. Gideon? I asked, and threw open the door. Samora, he said, leaning down to kiss me. I'd gone months without seeing him. 3 months. And kissing him reminded me of how much I hated being apart from him. His lips played with mine, fiercely, demanding. And all that I remembered. Kissing him was like eating a meal after a long fast, or drinking water after a long day dry in the desert. I let him push me into the room and shut the door with a firm shove. He unbuttoned the buttons on my tight black leather vest, then unfastened each button on my blouse from my collarbone to my belly button. He took a moment from kissing me to stare down at my throat and the tops of my breasts peeking out from my corset. By this time I had pulled the tie from his neck and pulled off his vest and red checkered shirt. We pressed together again, skin to skin, while he worked at the lacing of my corset before lifting it over my head. I let my eyes half close as his warm mouth pressed against my throat, down my shoulder, and gasped as his lips met with his hand at my breast. I sighed, head hanging as he reacquainted himself with my body. The light was dimming in the room, and it was harder to see him, but it brought my focus to the moment at hand, and I reveled in the sensations. An angel making love is a glorious thing, and the power of it would cause mortals to shake in their boots. I felt lit up from the inside, my skin and face hot and flushed. After I had slipped off my boots and he had removed his, we fell into the creaky bed, limbs entwined, wriggling out of the rest of our clothing. We spent the remainder of the night caught up in the pleasure and relief of being together after such a long separation. It would have been so much easier, I couldn't help thinking at one point, if Gideon and I worked for the same side. I should take some time to explain my history with Gideon and heavenly politics. Gideon and I were both angels in heaven, living out eternity by worshipping the Holy of Holies. Everything was going well. Lucifer was the Supreme One, God's best buddy and all that. Until God got himself a new project. Some say that Lucifer was jealous because of all the attention God was giving his soon-to-be-created world, but I know the truth, because I was there. God always got excited when he was ready to start on another galaxy, but we all had to admit he was especially eager about this one. The hours he spent on it were ridiculous. He'd set himself up a model of it and moved pieces around to consider exactly how he wanted to fit it all together. "I think I should add more water," he'd say one day. "We should make the inhabitants look like us," he'd say another. It was like he thought that everything he'd ever made before was wrong, and he was going to do it correctly this time around. Which was all well and good, until Lucifer had enough. "You talk all the time about how much your new creations will love and worship you, and yet you do not give them a choice in the matter," he said to God one day. God's brows furrowed, and he looked at Lucifer. "What do you mean?" he asked. "These humans, as you call them, would always love you, no matter what. It's not as if you presented them with a choice, saying, 'Do you choose to love or reject me?' There is no risk of rebuttal for you, therefore there is also no satisfaction." "But I will love them unconditionally. Why should I not expect the same from them?" "You are God. You can make anything. You understand the ins and outs of the universe and all its infinite qualities. These are limited beings with no forethought. If it wasn't for you, they probably wouldn't understand how to eat or breathe either." The discussion quickly turned into an argument, with both sides refusing to give. Lucifer had never dared argue with him before, so I think the sting was double for God. Finally, he acceded Lucifer's point. "You want them to have free will. You want them to have a choice whether to love me or not. That's fine, I can do that. If I do, someone will have to be there to show them they have a choice. Someone will have to offer them the evil with the good. Go be the ambassador for choice. Take your friends with you.
You think your goal is noble, but I tell you truly, you will over time be twisted and warped by the evil you must represent. The thing you abhor will be what you love, and you will never be my intimate again. I am paraphrasing all of this, but the gist is still the same. Lucifer left with thousands of angels who had taken his side. For a time, it seemed he had the right of it. Humans did have a choice in who to love, and when they chose God, it was more precious to him than it might have otherwise been. He was also right, as he always is. Over time, Lucifer and his cronies became warped and ugly, reveling in each soul who chose not to follow, for it proved again that Lucifer had a point when he challenged God. In the middle of all of this were Gideon and I. We were best friends in heaven. We sang all the praise songs together, talked about everything, spent endless time in each other's company. When Lucifer and God had their big rumpus, Gideon and I became divided, each convinced that the other side was wrong. I chose God's side, and he chose Lucifer's, and when Lucifer left, so did he. It's hard to be sad in God's presence, but I missed my friend, almost to the point of agony. I applied again and again to be an agent on earth, but my requests were denied. The hosts of heaven had decided that I was at risk for joining Lucifer, considering my closeness with Gideon. Many thousands of years passed, and the argument between God and Lucifer turned into an outright rivalry. Examples: Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel, Job and Jesus. Somewhere along the line, I was finally permitted to join the other angelic agents on earth. I travelled where I was ordered to, always keeping watch for my friend. It wasn't until I arrived in the Wild West that I found him. I was riding through a one-horse town, looking for a store where I could pick up some supplies before moving on, when I spotted a tall figure standing next to a horse that was tethered in front of the town's lone saloon. I still question how I recognized him after thousands of years of separation, but the only thing I can point to is the almost infinite amount of time we'd spent together before that. He stood in a casual stance, hand on his hip, watching me ride. His hat hung low over his eyes, but I could still see the curling strands of his black hair over his ears and neck. His figure had always been lean, but there was a new hardness to his jaw, shoulders and arms. In my 30 years on Earth, I had learned how human-like my emotions could be, and I felt now my pounding heart and nervous stomach as I considered what I might say to him. I slid down from my horse and walked over to him. "Gideon," I started to say, when he grabbed my arm. "Get on your horse quickly. The others are here," he said, mounting up. He looked around him before urging his horse onto a trot through a back alley. I followed him through town and out into the surrounding country. We rode for over an hour without speaking or encountering another person. Finally, he pulled up on his horse's reins and slid off his saddle. I did the same, and he held me by the shoulders, an arm's length away, staring at me for several long moments. "Zamora," he said, "I've waited so long. I've missed you, my friend." Then he pulled me into his chest, as he had done so many times, in a brotherly hug. My body didn't respond as it had before. In heaven, you see, a hug is just a hug. A kiss is just a kiss. On earth, when his arms encircled me, I felt an urgent need to hold him with my own arms. "Gideon," I said, confused, "I feel strange, as though I need to be closer to you than I have been before." I slid my arms up his back, and over his shoulders caressing, then up to his face where I palmed his cheeks. He leaned his head forward till his forehead rested against mine. His arms were still around me, but at my confession they tightened, pulling me closer into his chest. "Samora, I can't tell you how many times I wished I could see you. I've had no one to talk to here. God was right. Lucifer and the others, with few exceptions, have become evil. I can't go back. God was clear about that. But I hoped that, like some of the others, you'd end up here." He leaned in and kissed my cheek, but I knew it wasn't what I wanted. With an instinct only mortals can understand, I turned my face so his lips met mine. Immediately, I knew that it was what I needed. He hesitated, holding himself back, then kissed me with a passion so fiery that I swear I burst into flames for a moment. I'd never kissed anyone before, so I wasn't sure what to do, but my lips sure seemed to know. They met his with the same force. Then my mouth opened in a small gasp to catch my breath and his tongue slipped inside. I liked this even more and returned stroke for stroke, giving and taking in a dance that humans had perfected long ago. But I was still learning, minute by minute. Gideon pulled back, suddenly, breathing loud and harsh. "Samora, I know what this is. I don't think you want to go down this road," he said. "Gideon," I whimpered, pulling him back down for another kiss, but he was immovable. "Samora, I want to, believe me. I want everything that you are unconsciously offering, but this is neither the time nor the place. We need to travel on further, find somewhere we can be anonymous and talk. We have a lot of catching up to do." I was disappointed, and not sure why, but I got back on my horse and travelled with him until we reached the next town over, which was considerably larger than the last. It was late, but the hotel was still open, and after parking our horses at the livery next door, we made our way up to the room he'd paid for. I was eager to begin where we'd left off, but after taking my coat, vest, and boots off, as well as his own, Gideon sat me on one side of the bed, and himself on the other. He wouldn't let me near him until we'd talked about everything we'd done since we'd been separated. Gideon was right. He'd led a lonely existence on Earth, while I'd been celebrating and mingling with the heavenly high-ups. He'd been a wanderer, existing more and more as an outsider among his own. While he still believed in the principle of free will, he abhorred Lucifer's descent into unrighteousness. This led to a falling out between he and Lucifer, and he hadn't seen that fellow for more than 1,000 years. He couldn't return to heaven, as Lucifer and all his cronies had been banished, so in the technical sense, he was still a demon, bound by the laws of his kind. He followed them when necessary, and tried not to let himself become twisted by their insidious doctrine. He slumped against the headboard of the bed. "It's hard, my life. There are a few of us who have realized the error of our ways, but there is no recourse for us. So we continue on, with Lucifer's former ideals, and we try to stay out of his way." He closed his eyes then, and for a moment, I thought he had fallen asleep. We'd been up for hours, and it was now early in the morning, though still dark. I pulled back the covers, feeling like myself again. "Here," I said. "We can talk more after you've had some rest." He slid down beneath them, then reached for me, holding me close to him, arms around my waist. He kissed the back of my head. "I'm never letting you go again," he said, and fell asleep. I woke to the feeling of his fingers stroking my hair. I turned over and saw him up on one elbow looking down at me. "Your hair didn't seem this pretty in heaven," he said, I swear it looks like it's pure gold here. His head was a mass of dark curls. His blue eyes looked like the sky. The smile spreading across his face required mine in reply. You seem better this morning, I said. Confession is good for the soul and all that, he said. Samora, I meant what I said yesterday. We are heading down a road I don't think you want to be on. It might be best if we part again just for a while, just to get this out of our systems. I was confused again. Get what out of our systems? I asked. This, he said, leaning down to kiss me. When I tasted his lips again, I knew what he was talking about. I wanted much more of it, whatever it was. I slid my hand around his shoulders and pulled him down on top of me. That was when he pulled back and perched his head up on his hand again. I sat up, irritated. Why did you start it if you didn't mean to go on? I asked. Remember that thing God made for Adam and Eve so they could procreate and multiply? He asked. I frowned. Vaguely, I said. Kissing is the first step towards that, he said. Mortals here kiss when they want to take off all their clothes and lie with another person. They do it to make babies and also because it feels good. It's a way to become more intimate with someone. Now that you're here, and I'm here, and because I'm a man and you're a woman, we both feel that same need when we are in close proximity. I'm offering you a choice, Samora. I would like to become more intimate with you, but I want you to understand that what you want to give me is meant to be a sacred exchange between a mated pair. That's how it was designed. It means something, Samora. It will bond us beyond what we've experienced so far. Realize that. I was silent for a moment, considering Gideon's words. I had missed him, even more so when I was on Earth and couldn't find him for all those years. I thought about my excitement and relief when I found him up there on the street. I remember the feelings I had when we were out in the countryside alone, embracing, lips meeting. I unbuttoned my blouse, pulled it from my pants, and shrugged it from my shoulders. I want this, Gideon. I want to be with you in every way possible. I threw my shirt to the floor and watched Gideon strip out of his vest and shirt until he was bare-chested. The sight of his skin made me feel how I had before, when I knew that I wanted to be closer to him. I turned to face away from him, lifting my messy braid to expose my back. "Can you unlace me?" I asked. "Yes," he said, his voice sounding deeper than before. I shivered, feeling his fingers on my bare flesh. He finished and helped me lift my corset over my head. Then I felt him pull my hair from its braid until it fell freely down my back. Running his fingers through the waves, he lifted the strands to kiss my shoulder, then my neck. I tried to turn around, but his hands held my shoulders while he nibbled on my ear. "I love you, Samora," he said, nuzzling the place where my hair met my neck. "Gideon," I said, turning my neck with a gasp, "please let me hold you." He faced me towards him and circled me with his arms. We kissed again, mouths dancing the steps that I'd learned the day before, tongues mingling, breaths combined. My hands traced the lines of his chest, and I pulled away to rub my face on his skin. "You smell nice," I said.
"I smell unwashed," he said, laughing.
"You, on the other hand, are soft and delicious." I kissed my way back up from his chest to his chin. He moaned, and I looked at him. "Does it hurt?" I asked. "No, let me show you," he said, and laid me down on the bed. He started at my belly and kissed a soft trail between my breasts up to my collarbone, then back to my mouth. At this point, I was writhing on the bed. "Gideon, please," I begged, "I want more." He gave me more, helping me remove the rest of my clothes and his own kissing every part of my body. Our bodies grew warmer and warmer until we had tossed aside the coverings and he was moving on top of me. Looking down, he hesitated. "I've never done this before," he said. "I don't want to hurt you."
"Shh,"
I said, reaching up to pull him down on top of me. It didn't hurt. Not a bit. Instead, it was the most wonderful feeling of friction and urgency. I felt complete in a way I hadn't before with him inside me, his weight pressing down on me, my arms and legs wrapped around him, encouraging him onward as my breath came in moans with every thrust. I felt something building. I could tell from his face that he did too. Just as I was reaching the cusp of whatever it was I was racing toward, Gideon threw back his head and cried out. We sailed away together on flowing waves of pleasure, and when the climax ended, we stared at each other with shocked eyes. Something had changed between us forever. When I woke up, so many years later, Gideon was gone, but he'd left me a note that read, "I love you, Samora." I groaned, still sore from my long walk with the kids. I needed a good meal, then I had to go and see the parson and fetch the items he had for me. I can't say the parson was happy to see me. "I hear you're on the lookout for Mr. Gareth," he said. "Some kids that help me are looking for him. I'm trying to make sure they're not headed directly into danger. Ma'am, with all due respect, Mr. Gareth is a demon. He is danger. You don't want to mess with him or his crowd." "I appreciate the warning, sir. Knowing he's a demon is half the battle. Where can he be found?" He handed me a set of new saddlebags, a canteen, a bedroll, and a small satchel with money in it. "He owns a whorehouse down the street. There is a supply office located at the back where he spends his days, supposedly counting his money." "Miss Samora, ma'am, I urge you not to mess with this man. He is a snake," said the parson. "Believe me, I would rather leave him alone, but my job dictates I must help when I come across a wronged individual. Gareth killed their pa and burned their ranch to the ground. Murder is against the law," I said. He shook his head. "This is a fool's errand," he said. "A fool's errand it may be, but I've killed demons before, and if I need to, I'll do it again," I said, caressing the colt at my hip. "Those who live by the sword die by it," the parson said, but he mentioned no more about Gareth, only directed me to the livery where I could pick up one of the mounts kept for agents in need. I was forming a plan. I would get my things and pack up my mount. I would tell the kids to let me feel out Gareth before we decided on a plan of action. And when I was sure I could get rid of him without their interference, I would take him out and head out of town. So that is what I did. I found the kids in their room waiting for me. Nicodemus stood as I entered. "What did you find out?" he asked. "Gareth is a demon," I said. He sat down again, and Petunia scooted over from the bed to sit next to her brother. "He owns the whorehouse downtown," I said, not bothering to soften my words for these two children who were grown before their time. "I'm going to head over to his office and try to take him out myself if I can." "I'd rather keep you two out of this," I said. They exchanged a glance. "We want to come too," he said. "You might need help." I shook my head. "No way, no how. I'm not going to be responsible for your deaths. I've got enough to worry about. You're good kids. You get out of this alive, and I'll try to use my connections to find you a place." "We want to come. I'll say it again, Nick. The answer is no. Do not push me on this," I said, and I left the room. I didn't keep my gun loaded, even though there was ammo in my belt, but I loaded each of the six chambers with a 44 round and clicked the cylinder into place. Then I slid it into my custom-made leather holster. I couldn't hope that I would escape without firing it, but I did hope I'd only have to use one of the bullets. This whole venture was moving along on a lick and a promise, and there was no telling what would come of it. I wandered down the street until I came to the whorehouse in question. It was a quieter town, so there were no girls hanging out of the windows or lounging around the entrance. It was also still early in the day, around noon. I walked through the door and into the parlour. There were a few girls sitting around in their scanty hose and corsets, smoking cigarettes and drinking whiskey. I can't say I blamed them. It was shaping up to be a hot day. "What can we do for you, honey?" one of them asked. "Surely you ain't looking for company." "I'm looking for Gareth," I said. The room quietened. "He is in his office?" "He is, but you don't want to talk to him. He's a busy man." I caressed the gun on my hip. "We have business," I said. "If you could just point me in the right direction, I'd be much obliged." "It's down the hall. Last door on the left," she said. I left the room and heard them whispering behind me. Heart pounding, I prayed a silent prayer for strength, then opened the door and went inside. Left it open behind me, as I might need a quick getaway. The room was large and crammed with boxes of papers. There was a large desk in the middle of the room and a heavy-set man sat behind it, with a guard standing on either side of him. The guards drew their guns as I walked in, and Gareth, I assumed it was, looked up from his papers. I put my hands in the air, signalling my intentions of peace, even though I wasn't the least bit afraid of them. His eyes snagged on my ring, and he smiled. "Put away your guns, boys. Your bullets can't hurt her," he said. "You're Gareth?" I asked. "I warn you, Angel, if you're here to kill me, you're wasting your time." "And why is that?" "Because if you try, I'll have my men shoot those kids behind you." I whipped my head around and saw the two kids standing behind me, Nicodemus holding his shotgun as though it had the magic power to save him. "What in the hell are you fool kids doing?" I asked, hands on my hips. What was supposed to be a simple assassination was now turning into a complicated maneuver. "We want our money," he said, looking at Gareth. "Excuse me," I said, feeling lost. Gareth shook his head. "I don't owe you anything, kid. You said if we was to kill our pa, you'd pay us 20 pieces of gold. We killed him and burned down the ranch. We did everything you wanted. We want our money. Now fork it over." "And yet I have no deed," Gareth said, setting down his pen. "We brung it," Nicodemus said, digging into his pockets. He set it on the desk in front of Gareth while I silently cursed him. The boy was a derned fool if he thought he could make a bargain with a demon. He was going to get himself killed for sure. Gareth smiled again, a smug thing that scared me through and through. It was clear he was prepared to get his land by hook or by crook. "Well now, I've got me a deed, I've got me a ranch. All I need now is for these two to disappear," he said, nodding.
"No!"
I screamed and threw myself in front of the kids as the guards raised their guns again and shot me full of lead. It hurt like hell, and I saw that I was now bleeding in a dozen places, but it would be some time before I felt the effects of my injuries. The guards, now empty of ammo, looked at their boss, confused as to how to go on. "Give them the money," I said, through clenched teeth. Gareth stared at me. "Who are you, woman?" he said. "What gives you the right to make demands on me?" "My name is Samora. You made a bargain. You must keep it. That's what gives me the right," I said. "Samora? Where have I heard that name before?" he asked, and my stomach clenched. I never asked Gideon why he'd been in town. "Didn't that fellow Gideon mention a woman named Samora?" he said, musing. Meanwhile, my blood was dripping onto the floor. "He did. He said he was looking..." "No," Gareth gasped, and I felt cold chills. "It's not possible. An angel and a..." His voice was cut off as the bullet from my gun hit him in the throat. He sat gargling and clutching at it until moments later, when he died. Demons do not die pretty. They seem to melt from the inside until they turn into a pile of steaming ash. I ignored this and faced one of the guards, sliding my gun back into its holster. "Give them the money your boss bargained to them," I said.
"Why should I? You can't shoot me, the boss told me."
"Oh, really? Did he tell you I could kill him, or did he give you some malarkey about being immortal? In case you haven't noticed, your former boss was a liar. Now give them the money before I decide to take out my gun again. As you can see, I'm a crack shot." I waited for him to get the money out of the safe and hand it to the kids when I grabbed their deed and shoved them ahead of me until we were out of the building.
"Our pa were a mean drunk, Miss Samora. He deserved what he got," said Petunia.
"Whether he deserved it or not, it's not your job to meter out punishments, especially not for money." "I can't even look at the two of you. Get yourselves out of town and be quick about it. Everyone in a 10-mile radius is going to know about that gold."
"We're going to California to start up a stake."
"Good luck with your travels, ma'am," he said, and they turned to go. I was starting to feel a bit weak. I needed to get out of town and tend to my wounds. I made my way to the livery and picked up my horse. Then I took the road to the north out of town. California was an appealing thought. I could use a change. It was harder and harder to stay upright on my horse, and I was feeling dizzy. My wounds needed to be assessed before I blacked out and was unable to heal myself. I couldn't die, but I could be paralyzed or comatose. I halted the horse and slid down, looking through my supplies for some bandages and maybe something to pry these bullets out so the holes could close over. I swayed on my feet and tried to regain my balance. Failing miserably, I collapsed, unable to move except to shiver and to stare up at the sky above me. I heard hoofbeats coming closer and prayed to heaven above. It was a friendly face. Footsteps approached me and I looked up to see Gideon looking down, shaking his head.
"Samora, Samora, what have you gotten yourself into?" he asked, reaching down to pick me up in his arms.
I hid my face in his neck.
"Put myself in the way of some bullets meant for some kids I was helping.
Knew they wouldn't kill me," I said.
"Well, they damn well came close," he said, and leaned me against a rock.
He led the horses over to me and looked through his saddlebags, brought over a blanket, and laid out some bandage rolls, a bottle of whiskey, and a knife to dig out the bullets. He stripped off my vest and shirt and cut off my corset. It felt strange to be bare to the world, but no one was around us, and I was concentrating on the pain that throbbed through my body. He picked out each of the bullets, washed them with the alcohol, then buttoned my shirt. He pulled down my pants and took out the two bullets in my upper thigh. I gasped when the alcohol hit them, but now that the metal was gone, I could feel myself healing. "Perhaps we'd better camp for the night," he said, sitting next to me. "I need to keep an eye on you."
"How did you find me?"
"I've been following you around town like a shadow since I left you this morning, in case you needed some help," he said. "I was going to California," I said, nuzzling into his shoulder.
"By heading north?" he asked, stroking my hair.
"I was thinking I'd take the railroad down to Sacramento," I mumbled, dozing off.
"Would you like some company?" he asked.
"What?" I said, shaking myself out of my stupor.
"I said, would you like some company?" he asked again.
"You'll come with me?" I said, now alert and hopeful.
"I'd like to."
I talked to Gareth in town, and it seems that Lucifer doesn't care what happens to me at this point, so I'm thinking I'll go rogue.
"Gideon, you can't ask about me. You can't talk about me. If anyone knew we were together, it would mean the end of both of us. I had to kill Gareth. He figured it out."
"I just told you. No one is looking for me, Samora.
"Gareth is a liar. How can you believe what he says?" I asked. He sighed. "I'm tired of being apart from you, Samora. I don't want to be separated anymore. Let's go out to California and try to start a new life." I was too tired to argue. So instead, I laid my head on his shoulder and let myself fall asleep, not caring where I ended up or how, as long as I could spend every night and every day near my love. A short note from the author about the story. The Angel and Her Gun story was an idea I got from a video game. True story. Every year I was part of a committee to choose a new video game project for the local college. One year we had a fantastic idea that was along the lines of Red Dead Redemption, except with more depth of character, and I found myself thinking, why aren't Western stories more popular? I couldn't stop thinking about it, until I decided what a Western really needs is some fantasy mixed in, and for some reason the immortal versus immortal clashing of angels, demons and humans seemed to go so well in my mind with the lawless and gun-toting Wild West. Once I had my world, Samora just seemed to appear in it. There she was, the consummate loner and gunslinger of the Old West. But she was also this vulnerable, lovelorn woman trying to find a way to make her Romeo and Juliet romance work in an unforgiving landscape. I'm not a big fan of the starstruck lover's story arc, so my biggest challenge has been to keep that glorious tension without annoying my inner romantic. I hope you enjoyed my story and happy reading.
Thanks so much for allowing us to share this, Kate.
I really liked this story because I like the kick-ass feeling I get from the female lead. I like her strong personality, and I really enjoy the story that has a non-typical romance subject. It reminds me, actually, of the film City of Angels with Meg Ryan and Nicolas Cage, which was actually a remake of the German film Wings of Desire, directed by Wim Wenders. If you haven't seen either film, they're beautiful. Just remember to keep the tissues handy. You can locate the show notes at rompod.com, and if you've enjoyed this story, please recommend this podcast to your friends. Come out of the romantic closet and help me share the love. There's always room for more lovers of romance. We are currently looking for more authors and narrators, so if you're interested in being a part of Rompod, please contact me, amanda.rompod@gmail.com. Special thanks to my husband, Simon. That's it from me. I've been your host, Amanda McCall. Thank you for joining me, and we'll be back next week with Autumn Academics and Affairs by Andrea Wilson. Please remember, whenever you can, share the love. This podcast is shared under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. You may distribute, display, and copy this work, but not for commercial use. You may not alter, transform, or build upon this work in any way, and if you use it, you must link to the original work. The stories within each episode remain copyright of the authors. RomPod is created using the Audacity editing software. The music used in each episode is sampled from Tango de Manzana by Kevin MacLeod. Find his work on Incompetech.com.